Good morning, Arizona. You are tuned in to Rosie on the House, your Saturday morning tradition for 29 years. Rosie's right here. I'm Romy. Mike's behind the board. Jennifer's on the phone at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. You can text questions to 411-923, or you can email info@rosieonthehouse.com if you have pictures that you need help with. It is 8 o'clock hour. It is our outdoor living hour, and in the garden right now, we find Mr. John J. Harper of Harper's Nursery. Good morning, sir.
And it is a good morning. Beautiful morning out.
Getting in the truck, as much as I don't like the 110-plus weather, there is just something about the aroma of a desert summer morning that I just love. I don't know what it is, but I had my windows down the whole drive-in today.
Yeah, you know, and as long as you can drive to work with the windows down, I don't care how hot it gets during the day. It's those days, you know, about mid-July, early August, when you hit the truck at 5 in the morning headed to work and you got to turn the air on. You know, it's a long one. It's a long one. But as long as our nights and mornings, you know, we get some relief. And you're right. There's something about the angle of the sun, the smell, the feel of the air. It's fabulous. And if you're going to do yard work, that's probably when you want to be out. It's sure a whole lot more enjoyable to do it early in the morning than it is, you know, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Probably for the next 3 months, we're there. You know, it's. I did our newsletter, our weekly newsletter, the other day. I said, okay, it's June. It's supposed to be hot. Quit whining. It is what it is. You know, June is our hottest month of the year. As far as highest recorded temperatures ever occurred in June, as far as just, you know, the chance of really getting hot, it's the hottest month of the year. We get into the monsoons and the nights don't cool off and the mornings don't cool off, but our temperatures moderate because of the moisture. And it's actually easier on the plants once the moisture hits. It's less comfortable for us, but it's more comfortable for the plants. So June's the month we really have to make sure we get our plants through. Because that's when most of the real stress problems can occur.
Not a big planting month. This is just to make everything live for another month.
Well, you know, there's certainly lots of things you can plant. Desert-adapted trees, shrubs, vines, you know, heat-tolerant, you know, plants and annuals and that are fine to plant. You know, don't plant and then go to San Diego for 2 weeks, you know, the day after you plant everything. And I don't care if you've got an automatic watering system or not. You know, those plants need a little extra attention for a few days. You probably don't want to go plant a bunch of rose bushes or peach trees or, you know, there's certain things we would advise you not to plant. But this is still a great time to plant, you know, especially, you know, Mexican Bird of Paradise and Lantana and Bougainvillea. The stuff you drive around right now and look at that looks really gorgeous. Oleanders and yellow bells. Isn't it pretty right now?
It is. Lots of color.
Lots of color. All of that stuff that you see that looks really good right now, you can plant right now, and it'll be fine. So feel free. But on your existing plants, you know, there's some things that if you will do right now that will help you get through the hot stretches that we probably have coming up and get your plants through with a lot less trouble and stress. Number one, check your watering system. At 6 o'clock this morning, I was out watering some pots and looking at some things, and I looked out in the gutter and thought, gosh, did my sprinkler system? Well, there's just water running down the gutter, and then I looked a little further up the cul-de-sac, and my neighbor's got water bubbling up out of the ground, you know, running over the gutter. So check your sprinkler system, not only for leaks, but also make sure it's delivering water where it should be delivering it. Make sure it's delivering enough. You know, whatever you were watering this winter, you want to be watering 2 to 4 times more when it's 105 plus than you were watering in the wintertime. So adjust your schedule, adjust your time, and make sure those, whether you got pop-ups in the lawn or drip emitters or whatever, if you have a deficiency in your system, when it's 105, 6, 7, 8, it's going to show up really fast. When it's 75 or 80, it might not show up at all.
You know what, John Jay, we had in the last hour the inventor lady in. And, you know,
yes.
I spend probably 3 hours a year futzing around with my irrigation clock, getting it adjusted seasonally.
Right.
We need to invent that sprinkler clock that's just spring, summer, fall, and winter. And you program it once, and just adjust it to the season you're in.
Seasonal adjustment. In an effect, they have that now with the percentage deal. It's still not maybe the best, but there probably is a way to do that. And certainly, if people are really technologically savvy with clocks that have Wi-Fi now, you can adjust them from your smartphone. So if I'm in San Diego and I look at the weather and it's going to be
a scorcher,
or if it rained, you know, two inches, I can turn my system off from wherever I am. So there are some technological advantages that you can take advantage of that will help you, but you still got to do it. I mean, it's amazing how many people do not know how to operate their sprinkler controller.
Well, I don't, but I get in there and futz with it three times a year.
Well, at least you do that. Figure it out. A lot of folks don't even figure it out. It's one of the reasons I've got a 30-year-old one, and I won't switch it because I know how to work it. It's not the most efficient. There are timers that will be a lot more flexible and would give me a lot more flexibility, but I've got it figured out. I've got my system down. I know how to adjust it, when to adjust it. I'll make it work. But so, yeah, know how to work your irrigation controller.
And like you said, problems manifest themselves a lot faster and on the hotter days than a cooler day. I actually have stopped, with the exception of my lawn, that's still on a timer, because I can see that in the morning when I leave. But all of our trees, I turn on manually, and I've got my days that I do each station because I walk it. I make sure the water's coming out. I make sure the heads are out. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's on drip. I would like to change that just because of the amount of time it takes to repair everything the rabbits and the gophers chew up.
Oh, yeah. You need to go to hard pipe.
But it gives me a chance to see it, and I get to look at each tree on that timer that week and trim it here, prune it there,
well, you're,
pick
you're,
a weed.
You're a gardener. You like to garden. And not everybody's like that, and I understand that. And those folks, you know, just want it to look good all the time. Well, that's a bit of a challenge if you're not willing to get out there and walk around and be involved in it on an occasional basis. So it's even more important that they understand how to, or hire somebody that can make those adjustments for them. What we see is everybody gets their system set up to get plants through this time of year, which is the hard time of year for plants, and then they don't change it. So we're wasting water come October through April because we're overwatered. We're watering like we would water in June, July, and August. So there are lots of things you can do to make that easier, and you know, depending on your technological expertise, you know, some of them are easier for others than others. Another thing that we need to do is actually fertilize plants that are just like in us. If we're well nourished, we can get through stress times a whole lot better than if we're trying to survive. So plants that are well fed, well nourished, and believe it or not, this is really when plants are really growing, and you know, they're transpiring, they're conducting photosynthesis, the days are long, there's lots of sunshine, and plants are using up lots of energy right now. So you need to make sure your plants are well fed. Put some mulch around your plants, or don't be so quick to rake up all the leaves and litter at the base of your plants. That acts like insulation. It cools the roots, keeps the soil moisture in the soil, cuts down on that. It'll actually control your weeds if you leave, you know, a layer of mulch or litter, or add some bark or something around your plants. It's just a great way to go. Make sure your plants are well secured, well staked, so they'll withstand the monsoon that's coming up. You got a month probably before those heavy winds. If you've got young citrus trees, young smooth-skinned fruit trees, shade trees, you ought to wrap or paint those trunks so that we don't have sunburned trunks. All of the guys that plant pecan orchards and fruit tree orchards will put, you know, some type of little collar or whether it's cardboard or something around their young trees to keep the sun from hitting the trunks of those young trees till they start growing and start shading themselves. So there's a number of things, but boy, make sure that irrigation system's working properly, especially if you are planting, you know, some new stuff. Here's another little tip. If you're planting a row of 10 plants, let's just say, or we've got some plants, don't get them all planted and then go back and start watering the first one. You know, have that hose going, start digging the holes. I like to get all the holes dug first and then pre-fill that hole with water, put the plant in it, go to the next one, then go back and start filling that first one in, move the hose to the second one. So you're watering as you go. You put those plants in the ground, and that soil is dry and hot. By the time you get back to start watering the first one, it's already wilty and stressed. And then water them two or three times. Really water them good that first day is really critical.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. If you have a question, we'll start with Phil. Get a call in before this segment. Welcome to the program, sir.
Oh, hi. How are you guys?
Good. How can we help?
Well, I have been cycling Bermuda and ryegrass throughout the years. And within the last 2 years, my Bermuda in the summertime just slowly died off. And this time of year, my rye's all dead. Basically, I just have a dirt backyard. And I'm not really sure how I can fix that problem.
Well, how shady is your backyard?
Well, it's got some shade in it. Is this Jay?
Yes.
Yeah, you've actually been in our backyard last year up on 29th and Thunderbird. You put in a light system for me and Kelly. It's got a lot of trees around it, and yeah. It has a fair amount of shade.
Yeah. So what happens in those shadier areas, it encourages the ryegrass to live longer, and then fill those areas once that ryegrass dies, the Bermuda doesn't want to grow very good in those shady areas anyway. And in your case, and I remember your yard very well, boy, it's going to be tough because you are very canopied with shade. I'd probably try and make that ryegrass last as long as I could and then maybe add some fescue or try some fescue instead of Bermuda.
We appreciate the call and good luck with getting your lawn the way you'd like.
Looking to give your house, home, castle, or cabin that curb appeal you've always wanted? Let the pros at Rosie on the House go to work for you. Get on the line now at 1-888-ROSIE-4U.
And we start this segment in Mesa with Alan, who wants to talk about peppers. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. I guess I missed your show last week, but I have a 5-gallon pot with about a 3-foot bush serrano peppers, and now they are all, went from green to red, and I'm just wondering how long I should leave them on, and also, once I pick them, how to keep them fresh, in the refrigerator or whatever.
Well, all peppers will turn red as they get mature or over-mature, whether it's serrano or a yellow hot or a sweet banana or whatever, they'll all eventually turn red. So, peppers you can pick just about any time you want. Based on day length and sun exposure and heat, peppers are going to turn red quicker, as it gets hotter and they get more sun. So with serranos, if you're looking for, like you see sometimes in the grocery store, that 3 or 4 inch long serrano that's green, you're probably not going to get that from here the rest of the summer. They're going to probably turn red unless you're shading them or something a little quicker than that. So you can pick them at any stage you want. They don't have to get to a certain size or coloring, and there's nothing wrong with letting them turn red. From that standpoint, as far as keeping them fresh once you've picked them, just like any produce, keep them, keep maybe a moist paper towel on top of them in a crisper or in a sealable Tupperware type container. Anything like that will keep them as fresh as you can for as long as you can. And otherwise, you can. Pickle them, can them, put them up somehow, and preserve them that way.
I see. Okay. Like sage, 2-3 times a year, though, the fruit will come out on them, and they're only about 2 inches long. They have, the huge ones you see in the grocery store, but they're enough to throw in an omelet or something.
There you go. They taste just the same. It doesn't matter how big they are. You're going to cut them up in pieces anyway, probably, so don't worry about it.
On my wish list of items, I'm not a big kitchen gadget guy as it relates to appliances, but I love old hand crank stuff. We got a hand crank coffee grinder. We've got a hand crank flour mill. There's something in Lehman's catalog that's a salsa press, and it's got different grades, and you just put all your peppers in it, and you turn it, and it just, you add all the vegetables you want for it, and it just, it makes fresh salsa right out the other side, so you make it as you need it. It's, yeah, it's been on our...
That sounds pretty interesting.
On our wish
list. You can make salsa all the time. That'd be good. Yeah.
Now, how long will my Anna apples last? I've got four
on the apple tree?
Right. And we've been thinning them a little bit. We'll go pick a bunch. We'll feed them to the horses just beforehand. And, you know, we pick the smaller ones to let the big ones keep getting bigger. And I keep wondering, how much longer will I have on those growths? Are they pretty much as big as they are now, as big as they'll get? And we should go ahead and...
Probably with the heat coming on, they're not going to size up much bigger.
Okay.
No, I would guess. So. And then you risk, you know, with the heat, having them start to go bad if they're not well shaded. Some of the ones inside that are shaded by the foliage of the tree and the branches probably would stay longer. But the ones that are out towards the edge that are getting some sun exposure, I'd probably kind of keep an eye on them and pick them as you go with those.
We're going to have a big apple turnover Sunday morning tomorrow, I think.
Nice.
getting a little close on the timing for the heat. But let's see how we can help Rudy this morning at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888. Rosie, for you. Good morning, Rudy.
Good morning. I've got a bunch of bags of Type S lime left over from a job. The contractor gave it to me, left it here, whatever. And I've got quarter minus in my yard, and I want to. Can I sprinkle this quarter, the lime on the quarter minus? Is it going to feed the weeds or kill them?
Well, probably neither. I don't think it'll do much for your weeds. You know, lime is, you know, probably some kind of calcium carbonate. You know, and if you want to be careful, if it's just out on gravel and there's not a lot of plants around it, I probably wouldn't worry about it. You could scatter it around, water it in. But I don't know how effective it would be as a weed killer or weed control, honestly. I really just don't know.
Let us know how it works for you, Rudy.
I just wouldn't put a bunch of it around, you know, that kind of lime. I wouldn't put, around my, you know, my plants very heavily, because it can, you know, make things a little salty. But, you know, you can use lime like that. If you got a dog kennel or a dog run that's getting a little odory, you know, it's really good at kind of helping, you know, control odors. They use it in outhouses all the time for odor control, that kind of thing. But
Well, we appreciate the call, and good luck. It's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you'd like to get in touch with Mr. John J. Harper, or text questions to 411-923. If you've got a picture for plant or insect identification, you can email it to info@rosieonthehouse.com. We'll be back after bottom of the hour news break with your calls right here. It's Rosie on the House.
Baby, don't you wanna go? I'm going up the country. Baby, don't you wanna go? I'm going to some place where I've never been before.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. If you'd like to join the conversation, get through a couple digital questions here. Texter wants to know, what can I use organic in my garden, and I'm getting destroyed by insects?
Oh.
I guess I forgot that part. Bugs destroying my garden. Is there a good natural product?
Lots of them. Anything containing spinosad, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D, is great for just about everything but aphids. If you've got aphids, anything with neem oil works really well. So, yeah, there's lots of good options for killing bugs with, you know, if it's caterpillars, BT or Bacillus thuringiensis, dipel, it's also called, thuricide, all the same thing. Works great. So kind of need to know a little bit what you're targeting to, not a little bit, you really need to know what you're targeting to kill. You know, what kind of insect do you have? Take a leaf, catch a couple of the bugs, take them into the nursery, and they can fix you up with the proper antidote or insecticide for that.
And we really enjoyed using that Captain Jack's dead bug brew when they approached us, and we tested it out for a year ahead
of time. That is spinosad, and that works great on, like I say, everything but aphids. It just doesn't do very or at all on aphids. One of our longtime partners, listeners, Tom Pastorino, was in the nursery the other day, and he just had his spider mites were on all of his garden vegetables. I mean, it was so bad. They were coated in webbing and insects, and so we got him turned on to the Captain Jack's, and hopefully that's doing a good job for him.
I thought you were going to say he was covered in spider mites.
Well, he probably was. didn't look like he'd had a bath in a day or two. So.
He's already called in once this morning in the 7 o'clock hour when Dad was talking about hiking the Grand Canyon. So appreciate you spending time with us Saturday morning, Tom. It's 1-888-767-4348. Rob sent us a picture in earlier, and he's got a grass lawn under a big ficus tree, and it's he's wanting to know if he's going to be able to bring the Bermuda in with all the shade.
It's going to get tougher and tougher as it's shadier and shadier. Plus, you've got that big tree that's competing for water and nutrients, around it. So, sometimes we have to just decide if we want shade or if we want grass. And, there's not much wrong, really, with not having much of a lawn through the summertime when you're not enjoying it anyway. In fact, I think sometimes we have it bass ackwards here as to when we should really have our lawns. You know, our ryegrass winter lawns from October to about now is when we're really out there enjoying and using the lawn. If it's a shadier area like that appears to be, it's going to be a struggle to get Bermuda grasses to grow there anyway. So, you know, maybe get it as good as you can and just kind of live with it through the summertime.
Yeah, and kids have a big factor of that. You know, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have this summer lawn, but it's hard to slip and slide in October.
Yeah.
A little cold at that point.
That's true. I mean, you know, it does, you know, there again, that's matching your lifestyle to your landscape. That's the true definition of, you know, in a way of xeriscaping is, you know, what are you using the lawn for? Is it strictly ornamental? Well, then, you know, maybe you decide whether it's worth having the lawn or not. If you got kids and dogs and pets and you're out there slip and sliding and, you know, the dogs need a place to play on and you know, use, then, you know, in all likelihood, you need some kind of lawn, you know. So in that case, you know, be cognizant of where you're planting shade trees. You know, if you're planting a shade tree right out in the middle of your lawn and your lawn's only a couple hundred square feet like that one, and that shade tree is going to shade the whole area in deep, intense shade, it's going to get tougher and tougher to grow the Bermuda grasses. You might try St. Augustine. You might try, there's a hybrid Bermuda called Tiff Grand that might be worth looking at. It's a little more shade tolerant. Dichondra, fescues, there's some things you can play with and try with, you know, mixed results.
We appreciate the email. I said Rob, it was actually Justin. I apologize. Hope that helps. Hot dogs and horticulture today?
Yeah, we do. Well, last one for the season. We starts getting a little warm, but we'll have Mike Patron be there cooking dogs, and come on out and get a free lunch. There is a free lunch today.
That's at Harper's Nursery on Hayden, south of Thomas.
Just south of Thomas at Virginia on Hayden on the east side. Correct.
Now what? With this going into June, as you were mentioning, this is typically the hottest month. What summer flowers? I like to keep flowers on Mama's front porch.
You know, we've got a lot of options anymore that we didn't used to have. It used to be just kind of vinca and moss rose, and that was kind of it. But there are pentas and angelonias. This isn't a new one, but I think it's underused as gazania. I think even Katie Ruellia and Lantana, if used as, even though sometimes those are landscape perennials or shrubs, they make a great annual. in the garden or in a pot that you just, you know, tear them out when it comes next summer. And of course, we still have vinca. The trailing vincas have gotten very popular, the Mediterranean or the cascading coras that are more of like a spreader. There's also a spreading angelonia. The sweet potato vine has probably become the most popular summer, even though it's not really a flower. It's colorful foliage, the purple and the greens you see mixed together. You know, those do a great job of covering up some beds, filling pots. They love the heat. They're very bright and colorful.
I don't know who the salesman for that plant is, but he sure did a good job last year. 2 or 3 years ago, you didn't see that, man. You couldn't pass a commercial property that didn't have sweet potato vine plants.
They're using more and more and more of it instead of some of the flowers just because it's so darn hardy. And it covers the space well and it fills things up, and it looks good.
It does, especially like you said, when you've got both colors.
Yeah, you almost need to use both colors to really get the full effect, to have that, you know, the one makes the other really stand out and gives you some color. If you just had all green or all purple, I don't think it would be quite so good. They're also great in hanging baskets, by the way.
How big will they get? You can put those in a pot?
You can. Well, that we've got one in a big whiskey barrel that by the end of the summer, it's out over the edge of the whiskey barrel and growing out across the asphalt 8 or 10 feet. So they can get pretty darn big by the end of the summer. You can, you know, pinch them back, trim them, you know, keep them pruned up, keep them contained pretty easily.
Now, you had mentioned shade versus lawn. You always say, you know, the best time for a shade tree was 15, 25, 30 years ago.
A while ago, yeah.
The second best time is today.
Yeah.
And to take advantage of the full shade, if you're trying to shade a portion of your house or a patio, this is really the time you need to take attention on where that sun is. Because if you did it in the winter, that sun was in a different location than where it's going to be hitting today. And the amount of daylight you have on it's longer. So really take note of where that shade is at, or where that sun is at what time of day, because that can really change where you're putting that tree in.
Yeah, and you want the shade this time of year, not necessarily so much in the wintertime. In fact, maybe even using a deciduous shade tree that loses its leaves in the winter is not a bad idea. So it lets the summer sun in and lets you help warm the area or the house. But the sun does move north to south, so the sun is just about here in a couple weeks at its most northerly path. Even though it's east and west and, you know, rises in the east and sets in the west, and as it gets hotter, the western exposure is the hottest, most hot side of the house, it is going to move from north to south in its travel across the sky. So sun doesn't move, the earth tips. But take that into advantage, into account when you plant that tree as to which way you want the shade to cast. Also, remember it's going to, you know, you want it to cast the shade in the afternoon. So, you know, you want the tree to not be right up against the house, maybe. You want it to be out a ways. You know, yeah, take all that into account. And, of course, the size of the tree, make sure we realize that, hey, that tree's going to get 20, 25, 30 feet across. You know, do you want it right in the middle of your yard, or do you want it off over a little bit, or, you know, is the yard big enough for that tree? Maybe you want to shade the wall by using a vine or a big shrub or something instead of a tree as well. So you got to take all those things into account. Right plant in the right place is a huge issue, especially when it then comes to maintaining it down the road.
And a tree needs water on the roots end at the extent of where the canopy is. So your watering is going to be out that far as well, which could really change it. I've got one case where that's kind of nipped me in the behind a little bit. We've got one little walkway path right here that I wanted it covered with a canopy. Well, now, right now, that's right where the tree line is. So every time we water, we've got this mud track right through our little walkway.
Yeah. Well, you know, some Bell Guard pavers and take care of that walkway from being muddy, right?
There you go. Let's bring Michael into the conversation. And Mesa, good morning and welcome to your program.
Thank you. You know, you guys, I love the idea of planting sweet potatoes, but are you talking about sweet potatoes or yams?
Well, this is ornamental sweet potato. It's neither.
Oh, bummer.
Now, you can plant sweet potatoes edible bearing ones, and they do really well all summer. It's just not as pretty a foliage. It's just kind of green.
And they'll tolerate the heat?
Oh, absolutely. They love the heat.
Well, so do I. Uh-huh. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We picked a good state for that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're in the right spot.
Now, do you have any magic gardener's tricks to digging up yams, sweet potatoes, potatoes? That's one thing that I have had great success growing. Not so great success digging them out without scarring them up.
Well, generally they use a fork. Like, you know, it's called a potato fork, and it's a wider blade. It's not a pitchfork that has round tines. It has a shorter, flatter, wider tine that you push down in and then, you know, pull it up so that, you know, occasionally you're going to run a tine through a potato. You don't know where they are down there. I don't know how you get all of them up without scarring or cutting some of them. It's just going to happen. But to minimize that, you use a tine, you know, so it's got spaces between the tines when you shove it down and then, you know, bend it over to, you know, pry it up. You know, you pry up some potatoes up out of the ground that way, and the soil falls between the tines, and you end up with potatoes. That's what those are made for.
On a beautiful Arizona Saturday morning. Be the last time we're going to say that for a little while, I think, as we get into our good
summer. Well,
the
mornings might stay nice for a number, you know, hopefully through June. You know, usually nights and mornings through June stay pretty decent. It's when that doggone love-hate relationship with the monsoon. You know, we love the rain and the cooling effect that has on everything, and we need the water, but When that humidity hits and those nights quit cooling off, that's the bugger sometimes.
And we're gonna get all the calls. My blank is brown. My blank is wilted. My blank is looking dreary.
Yeah. So we can't overemphasize enough, especially now that we're also going into vacation season. People are leaving their homes for extended periods of time. And I know we put a lot of faith and trust in that irrigation, that automatic. Everybody always says, well, I have an automatic irrigation system. Well, number one, do you know how to use it? I mean, do you know how to really make it work the right way? Do you know how to adjust it? Some people don't even know where it's at. So find it, turn it on, walk through the system, get a neighbor to help you, get your wife to help you. It really takes two people. It doesn't take two, but it helps. If somebody can stand at the clock and turn things on and somebody can kind of watch and make sure everything's popped up, better yet, as you do, Romy, turn it on and walk around. You know, are those sprinkler heads that are popping up in the lawn popped up? Number one. Number two, look at them closely. Are they really spraying a complete spray, or do they have little gaps and streamers? Are they shooting straight up in the air? Are they spraying back over the sidewalk? You know, is the water going where it needs to go? Is it putting enough water on? Measure the doggone water. Put a tuna can or a pie tin or something out in the lawn and actually collect water. It takes a minimum of about 2 inches of water over a 7-day period to have a decent, not a great, but a decent, acceptable Bermuda grass lawn. Probably more like 3 to 4 inches to really have a golf course quality looking lawn. So, you know, if in a half an hour you're putting, you know, an inch of water on there, you know that if you want 3 inches of water or 4 inches of water, it's going to take a couple of hours of water. Most likely you can't run it for a couple hours at one time without it running down the street. So however you want to divide it up, you know, that's fine. But measure the water, know how much water you're really putting on your lawn, and know that's what it's going to take for the summer to have a great lawn.
On the lawn, is there a best time of day to water? You
That's
hear
a
lot
question.
Of different theories.
Early morning is probably the best time. Number one, it's not windy typically. You know, the wind really plays havoc with fine sprays of water. It evaporates it. It blows it where it shouldn't go. The other thing is we want to do it before the sun's hitting it, so we don't have evaporative loss as we're spraying water into the air. So I like to do it early in the morning. You can do it at night. The problem with doing it middle of the night is that you can, especially as we get into the monsoon, run into some fungus or disease problems if that lawn stays wet and damp all night and the nights are warm. So I like to do it really early in the morning, like 4 o'clock. Don't do it in the middle of the day, whatever you do. I mean, that's just not efficient use of water. Between the sun and the wind, you're just not getting the full effect of the water you're putting on.
On the timers and on the irrigation, if something's not working, how do you start troubleshooting? Where do you start? Do you start at the box? Do you start at the valve? Do you start at the...
Well, open the clock lid. Number one, is the time set right? So it should be, what if it's 10 o'clock in the morning, it should say 10 o'clock. Check the date. It should be on the correct date. So if the clock's not keeping proper time or date, you know, right there, we've got an issue. Now, they can get thrown off by electrical outages, that sort of thing. Set it correctly. Go back and check it later in the day or the next day. If it's losing time, not keeping correct time, there's your first problem. So if the clock is working properly, you know, and it's sending electricity down the line to the valve, and we know we're getting electricity to the valve and the valve's not working properly, so maybe we have a bad valve or we have a bad diaphragm in a valve. If you can turn the valve on manually and it runs everything correctly, the valve's opening and closing and it's functioning properly, then maybe it's a bad solenoid or a bad connection with the electrical. So you just kind of have to start at the clock, work your way through the electric. Is it electrical or is it in the valve part with the water part of it? We do have issues where if you have an older home, maybe your main line isn't even delivering as much water to the house as it used to. So the pressure goes down. So maybe you have to make adjustments in how long you run the system if you don't have the pressure you used to have, or you can change heads. They have these MP rotators, these low volume sprinkler heads anymore. If you don't have really good pressure, or even if you do, they're wonderful. They don't get affected by wind. They're a great water efficient head. You might consider switching to that type of an irrigation head as well. Try and have all your heads the same. Don't have a couple of this kind and a couple of this kind and a couple of that kind. That makes it harder to get the lawn balanced as well.
Well, we appreciate your time. It's Mr. John J. Harper of Harper's Nursery, off to hot dogs and horticultural today at Harper's Nursery.
Come hungry. Yeah, come on in. Have a hot dog.
Very good. Thanks, John J. Listen, in the 9 o'clock hour, we've got a special guest coming in. The solar industry, residential solar power industry, has another deadline pending that you're going to want to find out about. If you're curious at all about can solar work for you at your home, we have Dan King from Harmon Solar coming in to answer your questions. You have questions on solar, that's your chance to jump on board and talk to an expert. As well, we'll be talking about the new pending deadline coming up for the solar industry. All in the 9 o'clock hour. Come 10 o'clock, we're going to be talking about garages. All ways you can get organized and put that room to use.
Sign up for the Rosie on the House weekly newsletter. It's filled with timely gardening and home improvement advice, as well as special offers and discounts you can't find anywhere else. That's RosieOnTheHouse.com.